I study the atmosphere. I've done a lot of work in Antarctica, measuring and understanding the Antarctic ozone hole, which has been tremendous fun. And I also do work on climate, and particularly Antarctic climate and how it's changing.
Talk a little bit about what, because there's so much data that comes in. How do you collect this data? And then what do you do with this data once you have it?
Well, one of the fun things about doing work on Antarctica is that there isn't always a lot of data. So sometimes you actually have to go down there and take measurements, and we did that. We, for example, took measurements not only of ozone itself, but also of some of the other chemicals in the Antarctic atmosphere. And one of the ways that we did that was by measuring the absorption of light coming in from the sun or the moon or the sky. And the moon measurements were the most fun because then we got to actually stand out in Antarctica in minus 40 degrees in the middle of the night, measuring moonbeams coming in. It was glorious.
And this, okay, you use fun and glorious and 40 degrees below zero all in one sentence. Those don't go in my lexicon.
Oh, you know, once you get to Antarctica, you cannot help but fall in love with it, be captivated by the incredible, pristine, crystalline palace that Antarctica is. You get used to the cold weather. After a while, you've been down there in the minus 40s. It gets to minus 20. It feels like a heat wave.
It feels balmy. and a lot of you've been studying this in terms of its impact in terms of global warming, climate change, all those kinds of issues. So, yeah, do you sometimes step back and there's so much controversy about global warming and climate change? Do you sometimes step back and go, you know, this is science we're doing rather than this? It seems to be a political debate.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, I really want to communicate to people just the joy of science and the joy of understanding what's going on. I think we ought to be all interested in what's happening to our planet. Whether or not we want to change things that we do because of it is entirely our decision. And to me, I think separating the politics from the science is a first step in making rational decisions about things and learning things.
And it seems so. I got to go up on up to Alaska and check out the glaciers, and all the questions people asked were, okay, well, show us the sign of where global warming's happening. And it's not always that clear cut, is it? Or is it?
Oh, you know, it's pretty easy to see the glaciers retreating worldwide. There's very good evidence that sea levels are rising. There's very good evidence that the world has gotten about a degree Fahrenheit, degree 0.3 Fahrenheit warmer than it used to be. So, you know, the evidence is all around us, and it's because we have so many different kinds of measurements that all tell us the same thing that we can be confident the world really is warming.
And the work that you did were produce the first evidence of chlorine chemistry as the cause of this ozone hole. Talk a little bit, because I'm not sure I know what chlorine chemistry is.
Well, chlorofluorocarbons are chemicals made in chemical plants. They're no longer made today. We've now banned them, and that includes even in countries like China and India, they're not made. But say 30 years ago, they were being made in large quantities. They were being used in all kinds of applications, and particularly at that time in spray cans. So they were the stuff that got the sprays to come out the nozzle. Nowadays, we can still have spray cans, but they don't use chlorofluorocarbons anymore. Those chemicals got up into the stratosphere where they were able to break down and make chlorine atoms, and those chlorine atoms just turn out to be very bad actors towards ozone, especially under cold conditions. So that's why we have an ozone hole in Antarctica, because it really is the coldest place on Earth, and that chlorine chemistry is much worse there than it is in other places.
And why worse there? Because of...
Because it's so cold that clouds actually form in the Antarctic stratosphere. They're very, very beautiful clouds. You can even see them with your eye. They look like little rainbow clouds in the sky. But they are very rare. They only form at those very high altitudes under extremely cold conditions. So we don't have clouds in the stratosphere, say, over the United States, and we only very rarely have them even in the Arctic. But we have them a lot in the Antarctic. and they lead to surface reactions involving chlorine that make the chlorine more damaging to ozone than it would otherwise be.
Wow. You were also co-chair of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Scientists from around the world focused on this issue. That had to be an amazing experience.
It was a very interesting experience. One of the things that's really uplifting about that is the way that you can get scientists from all around the world, from all different cultures and languages, get them together in a room and have them look at the data, and we'll be able to come to some useful conclusions, and we can agree on things. And it's so different from the political situation where different countries just don't seem to be able to agree on anything. Science, I believe, really can be the light of the world. It can tell us what's going on.
And it seems difficult today to separate out the facts from the opinion. It all of a sudden they get all clumped together in some way, and even though facts seem pretty, they're black and white. They're yes or no kind of things.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that we have to do everything we can to separate facts from opinion. People are certainly, entitled to their own opinions, but they're really not entitled to their own facts.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard for people to do that because we want so much to understand things. We get exposed to so many different things so fast in today's world that, it's really hard to tell where a person's opinions end and their facts begin. But on this problem, I think it's actually pretty simple. It's a fact that the world is getting warmer. There really is no debate about that. There is plenty of good evidence that strongly points towards carbon dioxide as the dominant cause of that warming. You can argue about, is it 50%, is it 80%, is it 90%, and that's a legitimate argument to have. You can then argue about how much climate change, how much more warming we're going to have in the next century, and those are all things that you can discuss scientifically, but that's really where the science kind of stops. And when you start debating, should we do something about it? How much is it going to cost? Maybe it won't be the end of the world. That's a fair statement. So maybe we shouldn't do anything. It is a political decision. And I really try very hard to keep the political points separate from the scientific ones.
And yet, in a certain way, what your challenge is similar to what I face as a journalist. You want to present people with information that they can use to make decisions in their lives. And I what I think about it doesn't really matter. It can be difficult, though, to separate that out sometimes. Or is it difficult? Or how do you do it?
Well, I think it's so fundamental to science. We do it all the time. We do it every day in science. You're constantly skeptical of your own findings, and you're constantly making sure that you've checked everything and have been totally objective in the way you've presented things. So it's not at all difficult. It's fundamental to the way science is done.
Yeah, and I know people have that issue with journalists. It's like, how can you pull yourself out of it? It's what we're trained to do. It's just, yes, we have opinions about things, but it just doesn't impact how we do our jobs on a day-to-day basis.
Well, a million times I've pursued a scientific line of argument only to find that that actually didn't work. That wasn't right.
And those are actually delightful moments when you find your theories are wrong.
People don't understand that we love that.
Yeah. I got to ask you, you've been a Fed for a long time.
I've been a Fed for more than 30 years now.
So why did you choose to become a federal employee to do this work?
Well, mainly because the people doing this kind of work at the laboratory where I was first hired were just really exceptional human beings and exceptional scientists, wonderful colleagues to have, and I just was so pleased and honored to be able to work in that laboratory. So it was really the colleagues that attracted me to working at NOAA.
And this challenge is something that, doing the kind of work that you do, not many places you can do outside of academic kind of work. Federal government, one of the places that this work really goes on.
Sure. Academia is one option. The federal government's another option. I not only enjoyed the colleagues, as I say, and the work itself, of course. I could have done that work, though, certainly from an academic platform. The people that were at NOAA were a major contributor to why I went there. But also, quite honestly, I know this is going to sound corny, but I really like the feeling that I'm serving the American public in what I do.
Not corny at all.
It's
one of the great things about doing what I do is I get to work with people. I get to cover people who are very passionate about what they do. So I got to ask for my former colleague, Amy Morris. She loves penguins. Did you get to see penguins when you were down there?
Yes, I did. I was very heartbroken my first year in the Antarctic. I went home without seeing any. But my second year, I think, I got it in spades. I was able to actually stand within a few feet of a little group of emperor penguins, which of course are the great big ones, and they are magnificent birds. It was amazing to see them. They're just so beautiful, and they're big. I mean, they're like half my height. It was pretty impressive.